Irreverent. Entertaining. Cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strohle right here on LA Talk Radio.
And it is hot.
Hot.
Outside. Yeah.
Hot, I'm telling you.
I'm Michael Sterling. Who are you?
You are Michael Sterling. And I'm Paul Strohle.
You are?
Delighted to be here, even though I'm sweating like a plow horse.
No, that's what you said right before we went on
sweating.
Air. Sweating. But it's no hotter than it has been.
No, it is. It is. It's supposed to be over 100 for like the next 5 days. And I live
really?
In Tarzana, which is close to Woodland Hills, which is the hottest area of the valley.
The
Did you know that?
Bed of the valley, yeah.
Useless shit stuck in my
yeah.
head. Can't
yeah.
remember my own phone number, but I remember Woodland Hills, hottest area in the valley.
Well, what we better remember right now before we kick into high gear here
the
is
sponsors.
To thank our sponsors. We'd like to thank, ladies and gentlemen, our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar.
And
let's throw some applause
yeah.
there.
Okay.
A little something there.
Let's do that. Thank you, Kevin, for adding to that. It's a
See, this is why we have to have cameras in
I
here,
know,
because
right?
it's just that sort of interaction
we're
that people don't
going. Television.
We're teetering. We're
teetering.
Yes.
It's a very, you know, Paul, very, very musical day here
yes.
in the studio. We've got two very special and very musical guests. Both here with us today are writers of their own musicals. One is known for such hits as Town Without Pity, the love songs of Gene Pitney, Good, Bad, But Beautiful, the music of Shirley Bassey, Peggy Lee, and Vicky Carr. And now Scary Musical, the musical, opening in previews tomorrow, Friday, September 12th, with its official opening on September 19th at the NoHo Art Center in North Hollywood. Say hello to the crazy talented Richard Hochberg.
Richard Hochberg is here.
Hello. How
Welcome,
are you?
Richard.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure.
Absolutely.
I can't wait to talk to you later on about Gene Pitney. I think Gene Pitney, one of the great unappreciated voices. Or
I agree.
Fantastic,
yes, he was.
Haunting voice.
Yes, he was.
Our other guest, award-winning composer, songwriter, and producer, who creates music for film, television, animation, and, you know, bar mitzvahs, smokers, everything.
What you got? What do you
and
mean?
On September 19th at the Los Angeles Theater Center, he brings to the stage a multidimensional reimagined project titled Vox Lumiere, The Phantom of the Opera. Kevin Saunders Hayes is here.
Nice.
Welcome, Kevin.
Thanks, gentlemen.
Nice
Absolutely.
To meet you both.
Both
and it turns
you.
Out that both of you, you didn't know that you were each guest. Well, you knew you were each guests today, but you didn't know who the other guest was
That's
today.
Right.
And it turns out you know one another.
We
Correct.
Do.
You do.
Really?
Is it something you could talk about, or was it you share a prison cell, or how did it work?
Well, it's, you know, things, you know.
Just
starts
happen.
In prison and, you know, gets to go through.
Colleagues.
Just
we've worked together and written together.
Yeah.
And you know, we share a mutual passion, so, you know, we kind of run in the same circle. But
we're fans.
Fans of each other. Well, that's
mutual
good.
Very
fans.
Nice.
Well,
and good. A cool T-shirt that Mr. Hochberg has.
Yes.
On, right? If the it's audience could see that.
It's a
Equus.
Equus.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
From London.
But before we speak to our lovely and talented guests here, Paul.
They are lovely and they are talented.
They are. Yes, they
yes.
are. How was your week?
My week was good. I went out to the Rubicon Theater, one of my favorite venues in town.
Yeah.
Not in town. It's outside of town. It's easy for me to get to because I'm starting in Tarzana, so it's actually quick to get out there, depending on when you go. And I saw Carrie Krim's play Conviction. Big fan of Carrie Krim after having co-produced Wake here earlier this year, another one of her plays. But I'm going to talk about that halfway through the show. But it was a lot of fun. I like that little stretch of Ventura out there. Main Street is a little
sweet.
Small town and great restaurants and shops. And
the theater's close by the beach. I think we talked about that.
Oh, and it's a great area where you can just, you know, as I always try to push out here on the left coast, park once and walk to things, which is a nice option. To have, which we don't normally have out here. Now, how about you?
You know, it's like 101 beagles for me. It's two new pups.
101 beagles?
Two new pups.
Yeah.
And they have really given me a run for my money. They, you know, I love both of them. They're amazing. But I forgot what it's like to raise children.
How's the housebreaking going?
It's actually, we've had, as a friend of mine said, with 3 pee-free days.
Now, 3 pee-free days. Don't lose me in the jargon now. Exactly. All your high tech pet talk.
Yeah.
So 3 pee-free days.
With that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
But
I'm assuming that means that they haven't peed in the house, not that they haven't peed
correct.
At all, because that would be a medical issue. So it's
you
just inside the house thing. Okay.
Yeah, it's all good. No,
they're adorable, by the way. I saw the pictures on Facebook.
And did you?
A few things. I got to say, few things as cute as a beagle. I mean, I'm a dog fan anyway, but the beagles just have that little face. Labradors are right up there, too.
You know, and one of them is a pocket beagle. Have you ever heard that expression before?
You carry them in your pocket?
Yes,
no. Almost. Pocket beagle.
Really? Actually, there's 3 sizes of beagles. This is the smallest, so it's 12 inches high.
That sounds adorable.
And she is adorable, and her brother is 1 inch higher.
So in the same litter, one can be pocket and one cannot?
I'm not sure about that. These are not related. It's just I said
that. Oh, you just said that. Okay. All right. Because they're siblings within your home.
And the other one is just the classic standard, gorgeous, you know, face, big soulful eyes. Well, they both have beautiful eyes, but the other, the boy is like magical.
Well, it's nice to hear that your carpet is doing better.
Yes. So my carpet thanks me too, so.
Well, shall we?
Yes, let's do that.
All right. Why don't you give this, our first guest, the intro, he is so due.
Absolutely. Our first guest, ladies and gentlemen, has composed more than 45 feature film scores, including 2 Academy Award nominated documentaries, Rock the Boat and Mighty Times, The Legacy of Rosa Parks. Fantastic. He is also the creator and producer of Vox Lumiere, Silence You Can Hear, a soul-pumping live theatrical performance that combines the power of an epic rock concert with the beauty of classic silent films. No stranger to the theater stage, having written both music and lyrics for 15 stage musicals, his current offering is, as press notes state, an explosive mashup of music, dance, technology, and silent film. Vox Lumiere, The Phantom of the Opera, offers a fresh take on the timeless tale, and it opens for a monthly series of weekend performances beginning September 19th and 20th, and on into October the 10th and the 11th, November 14th and 15th, and December 12th and 13th at the Los Angeles Theater Center. Please welcome Kevin Saunders Hayes. Yeah, baby.
Welcome, Jeez, Kevin.
You didn't think I could scream like that, did you?
Welcome. That was quite the intro. We appreciate you. We appreciate that. Okay, so Vox, voice,
right,
and Lumiere, meaning light. I'm going to say both of these things as though I knew them already, and not that you mentioned them right before the show went on.
You have a computer. You know how to use it. It's good.
So I'm John Q. Theater goer. I'm going to the LA Theater Center. I'm walking in, and what is... I mean, I was saying earlier, I saw the website, and it looks stunning from the website. I can only imagine what it's like live. What can people expect when they go? The whole idea of the silent film being sort of brought to life with technology and whatnot.
Well, we've got multiple screens, a main screen and wraparound screens. We enhance the film with multimedia, live performers, a live band, dancers, multi-layer set, light show, costumes. But and all of that working together to enhance and tell the story of the film. Wow. So we're taking this two-dimensional art form of silent movies and really blowing it up and three-dimensionalizing it and kind of we also think of it as kind of opening a portal to these old movies and kind of bringing them into the 21st century.
You know, I think that to me was what I found so intriguing about it, because Michael and I talk about this all the time on the show, and that is one of the things that we really have to actively pursue, and I'm sure both of you would agree with me on this one, that is we have to involve younger people in live theater. I mean, I don't know what the median age of the ticket buyer right now is, but I'm sure it's well over 40. And this just sounds to me like, and Scary Musical as well, sounds to me like one of these great opportunities to really grab that audience with something that they won't find stuffy, or won't find, you know. When you pick the causal pieces or whatever, or the films to base this stuff on. Is that sort of a committee decision? Do you make the choice?
As I say, with Vox on the Air, there's only one person to blame, and that's me.
And you came across this idea in a thrift shop, is it? In a Big Lots.
I mean, we have Vox Lumiere because I needed underwear.
Is that a scene we could look forward to?
Or? You know, that's the absolute truth. I had this idea.
And you went to Big Lots for that?
I only had like $5. I literally had $5 in my pocket. I thought, okay.
Michael, we're not all to the manner born when it comes to underwear, okay?
Yeah,
maybe
I'm
you go to your
saying,
highfalutin
you know,
underwear
they might
places.
Have three legs in them, but I thought I'd get some underwear at the Big Lots because they always got, you know, you can get 40
They're irregulars.
$11.
They're
exactly.
irregulars.
But who's going to say they're under your pants?
Yeah. Well, you got to expand on that. You can't just
so
say.
I went in. I had this idea. I'm a film composer and a songwriter. And I never got to do everything in the same film. Plus, I was doing my guerrilla theater and writing lots of theater. So I had this idea. I'm developing themes for film. So perhaps if it's appropriate, I can write lyrics, put that into the film, and enhance the storytelling. And I said, that's a great idea. And there's not a director in his right mind who's ever going to let me do that to this film. So I said, great, we'll shelve that and you know maybe some other lifetime. So I went in looking for some underwear, rushing between you know my day job of scoring films and going to a rehearsal. And I said, okay, I'm going to dash in here, get in and out. I'm looking around. I see this bin. It said Silent Movies, $1. And it absolutely stunned me. I was like, okay, well, they're silent and they're old, and maybe these people aren't around, and they can't get mad at me. So I did the mature thing, and I went home with silent movie tapes instead of underwear.
That's interesting to me, because it would seem not a logical place to be able to find something like that.
It was, you know, luck, fate, but they, you know, they'll get a grow, you know, they'll find all these different things, and it's like, well, we got these, sell them. Let's see if we can get the dollar for them. So,
and was your did you have an affection for silent films before that, or I mean,
not really. I mean, I mean, in college, I think they maybe made me sit through a showing of Metropolis, a terrible 16mm copy, and I'm sure I fell asleep. But you know, but after coming home and back in then the days putting on a VHS tape,
right.
I was absolutely stunned. Of like these movies were, it's like, oh my gosh, this is magnificent movie, first of all.
Yeah.
And then second of all, I could see immediately, okay, this part, I could see this is scoring. I see this, now I could see the character singing here and telling their story, their backstory here. So I was just mesmerized and stunned.
Because I find so much, because I love silent movies. I had a wonderful film study teacher in high school who turned me on to the more comedic stuff, Chaplin and Keaton and Fatty Arbuckle, that sort of thing. And what always bugged me about it was that it was never presented in its full format. Like people, you would always see a clip. You'd always see Chaplin doing the Dance of the Rolls, or you see him doing some, you know, the isolated things from the films, rather than the whole piece of art from the start to the finish. And do you see the whole film, a majority of the film, a truncated version?
You see the whole film, because as the composer side of me, it's like that's the magic and the fun of putting the puzzle pieces together.
Right.
Because that's the way the director wanted it, and the writers put that together. So that's the composer part of me is like, okay, I'm going to score that. I'm going to work with that. But to your point, you know, about young people, there's a visceral, I mean, the thing about silent films that I've fallen in love with is that without words, with their bodies and their faces, they can tell these stories. And so that's the same magic, I think, of music, that you can tell stories without speaking anything. So I marry those together. So without saying a word, and you can go to any country, and we have and done this, you can tell these magnificent stories, you know, and really get into this deep, visceral level. And,
right.
And to your point about bringing younger kids in, I always use my nieces as an example, because they were 13, 14, 15, they brought a busload of their school friends with them. You know, and teenagers aren't going to lie to you.
Yeah.
But they, you know, they were mesmerized, and they were, like, cheering and, you know, on their feet. And afterwards, they were like, silent movies are great. I got to find out more about them. So, you know, it was sort of a win-win.
Yeah, and the running time, if I remember correctly, the running time of those films was just, it's not like, they're not like 2-hour films, right? I mean, they're just like, what, 80 minutes
they're
or?
Like 90 minutes out the door.
Okay, yeah.
Because they haven't got another showing. They got to show it again and make more money.
Right. No, I just, and you know, you bring up a point. One of the things that, as far as accessibility, that's the reason that Chaplin was the first great global superstar, was because, you know, at that, when 75% of the planet doesn't speak English, you know, you're not limited with silent and with pantomime
exactly.
and all that.
So that's sort of the magic of movement and music and light and, you know, without having to speak, you can tell wonderful stories, and really, people anywhere will understand what you know the emotions and what the drama or the comedy or the scenario is.
And so, this one is Phantom of the Opera. This is the one that people that's opening
remind us. Yes. I have it right here.
September 19th.
September 19th. But you've done other ones as well, right?
We have now five current productions. Five. So we have the Hunchback of Notre Dame, Metropolis, Peter Pan, and we do have a greatest hit show, which we will do at cruise ships and casinos. But the way we've been able to develop this show is that we've been touring.
Is it easy to bus and truck something like this?
Not
or?
At all. I don't recommend it.
Okay.
No, but that's the way we've been able to develop and grow the show by introducing ourselves to the performing arts market and going to the conferences and saying this is what we have and we think it's something exciting that your audience will like. And so it's been a long process of introducing people to what a Vox Lumiere is and why it's exciting. And so now we're excited about being home and doing it, you know.
Was your Peter Pan, your version of Peter Pan, the one that was in Orange County?
No, that was, a different multimedia kind of theatrical production. Mm. But not many people know about
that. I think that was British, actually, now that you say that. Yeah.
I think it was the same people that did Narnia, which was mm-hmm. also beautiful. I think they did it in the round with a lot of projections,
right.
And it was quite beautiful.
Now, all of that, this amazing spectacle, and it's only running two nights a month. Why is that?
Well, we wanted to take what we've learned on the road, the touring aspect. We know how to put the show up and take it down. And also, our long-term goals, we want to stay and run in Los Angeles for a long time. As mm-hmm. I mentioned, we have four shows now. I'm writing two new shows. So we know in Los Angeles, you know, it's a big city, and we're a mean, lean machine here. We don't have a lot of marketing dollars. Mm-hmm. So it's a very word-of-mouth show. So we said, well, what if we do it a couple of nights every month, make it an event, and then let the word-of-mouth spread. And then what our dream would be is to run Phantom and maybe run for 9 months or a year, and then we'll switch out and do a new show. But let people know that every, you know, once a month, you can go down and see what Vox Lumiere is up to.
And is it are you in a situation where it literally put everything up that day, or are you able to leave some of the set there, or your equipment or whatever? Because I always think in terms, you know, my producer hat.
No, it's a good producer. Well, we're actually, for this first time in, we're actually loading in tomorrow, a week before the show, which is usually a huge luxury for us because it's 8 o'clock in the morning. It's like, well, okay, 8 o'clock, they're all going to be here. So this is our first time in, we're gonna actually work at, okay, great, this is where all the pieces go. So in the future, we'll be able to come in, you know, the Thursday before, put the show up and do it, and, you know, have our cycle down, have our routine in down.
And your Phantom is, I see, James Lynch.
Amazing, talented person.
Marissa Johnson, who is a friend of mine, is your Christine, or one of the two Christines, I guess.
She's
right?
Amazing.
Yes, she is.
We have such a great, the whole cast, we're so blessed. They're incredible voices. The dancers are just off the hook. And the band is stellar.
I want to throw this out here, too, which we will do a couple of times before the end of the hour, but this is how people can attend this. We're talking, of course, about Vox Lumiere, the Phantom of the Opera, with the tagline, an explosive mashup of music, dance, technology, and silent film. This is playing at the Los Angeles Theater Center, and that's 514 South Spring Street in Los Angeles. And listen close to the performance schedule, but we'll give the website too. It's Fridays at 8, Saturdays at 8, and the Friday nights are September 19th, October 10th, November 14th, December 12th, Saturdays being September 20th, October 11th, November 15th, December 13th. So as Michael said, it's two 1 weekend a month. And for on the interweb, as the kids are saying, voxlumiere.com. Lumiere, Vox is VOX, and of course, Lumiere, LumiereE. Did I say that right?
That's
Sorry.
It.
Sorry. I need new glasses.
That was good.
Facebook.com, Vox Lumiere, and Twitter, @VoxLumiere. And as I mentioned, we'll throw that out there a couple more times
Kevin, by
the end of the hour.
I have a question for you. Presented by Stage 28. Is that your company?
That is our company.
And that was also the soundstage for Phantom of the Opera at Universal Studios.
Very good. Yes, it is. And that's actually now there's a big big to-do because there's been some rumor that they might tear it down.
Really?
Which is very upsetting because the scene, the opera house is still in the soundstage. You can actually still go tour it. But that was the first enclosed, I think, air-conditioned soundstage in Los Angeles. And Universal, there's these wonderful pictures I should send you guys. You can put them on the website. But they're back in the when they were building it, the lumber trucks would drive in from the from where they were cutting the lumber mm-hmm. down, and they, Universal had signs up, you know, going to the future home of the Phantom of the Opera. You know, they lost
no promotional time at all.
No promotion was left unturned.
So, absolutely. When you are watching these films and thinking about doing it, do you? I mean, is it as simple as just watching it? Okay, let's. I mean, and sort of taking notes as to when you think it should be expanded on, what should sort of be left. I mean, are there times where it's just the film by itself? And then, and I would imagine that sort of helps with, you know, sort of a non-distracting narrative if needed.
Absolutely. But, it's all those different moments. So it's a puzzle of thinking theatrically with it and thinking theatrically how the music might move, as well as there are, like I said, there are moments where, you know what, we're 'cause we feel like we're performing with the people on the stage. We're working with them. They're part of the ensemble.
Right.
So many times it's like, you know what? There's some scenes or some of my favorite scenes. It's just scoring in the movie. I want you to see that because it's brilliant.
Yeah.
So it's that. And then, you know, when I feel like we can enhance or perhaps tell more of Christine's story or tell more of the Phantom story or tell more of what's going on with Raoul, then I'll expand that in some different songs.
Wow.
Or when we get to the mass ball scene, it's like ours is a big disco number. So it's, you know, it's... For what reason? That's just what it just felt right.
Oh wow! No, it sounds
that's
wonderful.
Awesome.
It sounds fantastic.
I have not had the pleasure of going to the Los Angeles Theater Center. How large is the venue?
It's a huge venue. They actually have four theaters in that space, and this is, I think, the biggest space. It's beautiful. It's almost like they made it for us. But they've got 27 feet up to the catwalk, and there's no proscenium. And it's sort of like you took a proscenium stage and turned it 45 degrees. So we have this beautiful playing area, very tall, so it's great for the screens. And then with a balcony, it seats almost 500. But the audience isn't very far away at all because it only goes like 7 or 8 seats deep. So it's very intimate at the same time. So it's
wow.
really wonderful.
And you were saying before we started the show, you were saying that in the past you've performed on the second largest stage in the world, only to the Sydney Opera House.
We were invited up to, and it's in Reno, Nevada, at the Hilton. Who knew?
Go figure. It's actually a Bob's Big Boy, but it's a very luxurious Bob's Big Boy.
You know, you can drive your bus through the drive-in window.
Yeah.
So we Art Walk, and they have a beautiful art event up in Reno, a week-long thing. So we were invited to come up, and they said, so they go and they pair up venues with artists. So they looked around, they looked at the show and said, oh, well, you need a big stage. They said, well, yeah, we need a big stage. So they said, good, we've paired you up with these people. So we show up. And this place is huge. I think we went walking backstage, and there's an airplane. There's an airplane backstage, and the thing is, it was not in anybody's way. It didn't get in the way at all. It's like, we're just going to leave the plane there. It's like, that's fine with us.
Probably the only time you will ever hear a stage manager say, just throw that airplane backstage. We'll deal with it later. Wow. Unbelievable.
That's the Hilton, you say?
The Hilton.
It's in Reno.
In Reno.
The Reno Hilton.
The Reno Hilton.
Yes. Yes.
So our dancers still go on about, you know, we almost didn't make that cross.
we
could have taken the plane to get there faster.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm going to get my shuttle bus for my entrance, you know. Well, that sounds
great. How very exciting. I want to come see this.
Please. I hope you guys will.
Absolutely.
Please come be our guest.
Absolutely.
We should do our arts calendar.
Yes.
And then continue chatting with Richard shortly thereafter, sitting here so patiently. Do you want to kick it off, Michael?
I will. From successful New York off-Broadway playwright Joanne Moscone comes the world premiere of the fast-paced dramedy You Love That I'm Not Your Wife, presented by the Fringe Theater Company September 12th through October 5th at the Avery Schreiber Playhouse in North Hollywood. You Love That I'm Not Your Wife features a tableau of quirky characters and tons of romance as it takes a look at modern relationships that mirror contemporary life in L.A. Sexy and edgy, the L.A. Times has called Miss Moscone's work a guilty pleasure for veterans of the single life. And in Miss Moscone's newest offering, she delivers smart and playful depictions of conventions that restrict or enhance one's love life. You Love That I'm Not Your Wife tells the stories of 5 women and 5 men living in Los Angeles for 10 different reasons. But they all have one thing in common. They need love, and they're all looking for it in all the wrong places. When Marie invites all her friends for dinner to meet Tony Ciccarelli, her new fiancé, after knowing him only a month, secrets and sex threaten to destroy their relationships, that is, until Sebastian arrives, a 20-year-old boy toy who seems to be the voice of reason in a room full of older and supposedly wiser strangers. But will they listen to him? To find out, get yourself down to the Fringe Theater Company at the Avery Schreiber Playhouse in the heart of the NoHo Arts District. Tickets can be purchased by visiting Fringe Theater Company, which is, actually I'm going to spell that out for you, Fringe, F-R-I-N-G-E, Theater, T-H-E-A-T-R-E-C-O .com. And for further information, call 818-288-2016.
We had them on the show.
We did.
Joanne and the gentleman... Blake Boyd. Blake Boyd was the other gentleman.
Yeah.
And what lovely people they were.
Yes, they are.
Yeah.
And really
enjoyed
it. Tomorrow night. So.
Yes.
Cool. And Paul, so you, as you said at the top of the show, you went to the
theater. I was an active theater goer.
Went to the Rubicon?
As my mother would say, I'm an active theater goer.
Saw conviction.
And saw conviction, yes. And it was, I'm going to give a little bit of the description on it that we did last week just to sort of set the table on this. Charismatic, confident, and caring, Tom Hodges is that guy, the teacher students adore and parents admire, smart, wisecracking colleague with all the answers, the neighbor who takes care of the neighborhood. The seemingly perfect husband and father, but when a student accuses Tom of crossing the line, his friends and family can't help but question his actions, and relationships become splintered. The play is Conviction. I saw it this past weekend. This is a I'd never heard this term before, but it's a rolling world premiere produced in association with Dead Posh Productions, Bay Street Theater, and Royal Manitoba Theater Center. This is playing at the Rubicon Theater in Ventura. We've seen a number of shows there. A great friend of the show, Tucker Smallwood, who's been on the show a couple of times, did Sunset Limited with Joe Spano there, which we really enjoyed. And Carrie Krim, who I think is just a wonderful, wonderful playwright, not only with her play Wake, but with this one. She has an ear for really strong, authentic dialogue, and her characters are always fully drawn. She's got a great sense of dramatic rhythm, and this show just really crackles. One of the things I really like about Carrie's writing is that she sort of pulls a page from Ibsen's book in that the characters talk a great deal around a subject, and because they're not really talking about what you know, the elephant in the room, they're sort of passively speaking volumes, and she's really gifted at that. What I really like about this play, too, is that it's sort of a look at some of the collateral victims of incidents like this, or supposed incidents like this. I'm not giving any spoilers or anything. You'll have to see the show to find out what actually take place. But it's a fascinating look at what happens in the fishbowl of someone's home when someone is accused of something this horrific. And that idea of the fishbowl is beautifully represented in their set there. Great set designed by Anna Luizos, assisted by Adam Karavatakis. I hope I have that right. But a portion of the set is solid, and then another portion of the set is done sort of with clear acrylic, like the frame of the home, almost like the way the house morphs into a fishbowl. People are able to sort of observe, you know, everything that takes. It's a great idea.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do something I don't normally do. We're going to give props to the prop people. It's a very prop-heavy show, and I just want to call out T. Teresa Scarano for a great job with her props, because, you know, those of us who produce theater know that can be a real heroic effort. The performances across the board are excellent. If I had to call out some of the performers, it would be the ladies in this particular production. Elise Merteau is beautifully understated in her portrayal of Lee, and that's the wife of the accused teacher. Her arc is palatable, heartbreaking, beautiful performance. And Julie Granada as her friend Jane. Carrie Krim, as I said, she creates great characters. But that being said, a lesser actor could run the risk of playing this particular role two-dimensionally. And Julie Granada's work is a wonderfully layered performance. It's subtle, it's sharp, and she is the engine of one of the strongest scenes in the second act, which allows us to see some of the best ensemble work I've seen on a local stage for a long time. This is playing at the Rubicon Theater through September 28th. That's 1006 East Main Street in Ventura, Rubicon Theater. Theater has the R-E spelling, rubicontheater.org. And as I said earlier, it's a great place to go. Get out there quick. Get there early. Have dinner. Go to the theater. And they're wonderful out there. Really like the Rubicon space.
Very nice.
Highly encouraged. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Wonderful.
Very nice. So you're going to introduce our next guest?
I certainly am, because someone is killing off the drama club at Vera Mills High School.
Vera Miles. Yes.
We had a Mills on the show recently. I have Mills on the brain. But this is Vera Miles.
Yes.
And someone is killing off the drama club there at Vera Miles High School. Everyone is a suspect, and the audience decides who the killer is. Here to tell us about his latest work, titled Scary Musical the Musical, beginning previews this week at the NoHo Arts Center before opening September 19th, with performances through November 9th, is one of L.A.'s most celebrated writer, composer, directors, who has also given us stage readings of the classics, such classics as Boys in the Band, starring Michael Jeter, Greg Louganis, and Bruce Valanche, and Valley of the Dolls with Jolie Fisher, Lorraine Newman, Donna Mills, Wilson Cruz, Ali Mappa, Douglas Sills, and Sharon Lawrence. Please welcome Richard Hochberg is with us.
Yeah. How are you, Richard?
I'm great. How
are
you?
I am well.
Nice to see you.
I have to say this right off the top. I didn't get to see Valley of the Dolls. I shot myself.
Oh, it was so much fun. We did it twice.
I know.
2 years in a row. Yeah.
I missed it both times.
It was a hoot.
And that was presented as a reading? Was just a reading of the actual script? Or?
It was a reading of the script.
Wow.
But the actors, I had them, they were on director's chairs, and they were all drinking martinis and popping pills during the whole thing. It was quite insane. And also, the three female leads were played by three men. It was Bruce Valanche, Alec Mappa, and Wilson Cruz.
Neely O'Hara.
And the three girls were played by three men.
Oh, that's hysterical.
It was crazy.
You must. Are you going to work on bringing it to the stage as a piece of theater, or what?
You can't get the rights.
Oh, you can't?
I don't think so.
Oh, man.
We're trying to do another reading for charity of something else.
Could it be done at Sterling's Upstairs?
Sterling's Upstairs at the Federal.
Why not?
Yeah. That sounds like that's like the perfect place for it.
Could be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or Peyton Place.
Oh, yeah.
That was the other one we're thinking of.
Really?
Oh, nice.
So now, the Scary Musical, the musical script, is that an original script, or is that pulled from something that exists already?
No, it's an original script.
Okay. And you, this is, give us sort of a, without giving too much away, can you give us a little synopsis of it, aside from what we already said?
Sure. It takes place
at Vera Miles.
At Vera Miles, who was in Psycho. So there are a lot of references. Vera Miles played Janet Leigh's sister in Psycho.
Oh, okay.
So there are many, many...
She's the one who goes around with the guy to sort of figure out what happened.
Correct.
Okay.
So throughout this script, there are many, many horror movie references, because I'm a horror movie fan. Basically, it takes place in a town called Hidden Secrets, USA. It takes place yesterday. Without giving too much away, someone is killing off the drama club, which they're putting on a musical called Scary Musical. And for some reason, someone doesn't want that musical to go on. So a reporter named Lisa Courtney Fox, who has a TV show called Horrible Story, comes to town to try to solve the case. And in the course of the show, the students one by one get knocked off in various insane ways. Daggers... Birds, decapitation. Okay. I won't give too much away.
Birds. Yes. Little nod to the master on that one.
There's a lot of nods. Yes. The characters' names are Carrie, Jason, Jamie Lee, Freddie, and Norman.
Okay.
Those are the characters' names. So
now we all know those, but you had mentioned we were talking earlier. So that sometimes, depending, it might be a little bit of a learning curve for a slightly younger audience if they're not as familiar with these. Well, of course, Jason they would be. Certainly, Freddie they would be. Carrie was actually the only one you mentioned, but even Carrie was remade recently. Right.
Norman is
very successful.
No.
Neither in film or on the stage.
I know.
In
yeah.
New York. Yeah.
Well, what I find is interesting, and something because Kevin mentioned something, one of my barometers are my nieces. It's funny you said that. So
okay.
I say, is this funny? Or what do you think of this?
No.
And my nieces do not get, maybe they get 10% of the pop references, yet they think it's hilarious.
Well, that's
just
it. They
don't understand it, but they think it's hilarious.
That's just it. Pop culture references aside, funny is funny.
Right. And plus, there's a lot of gratuitous nudity in my show. So
really?
Just, you know, men with their shirts off for no reason. Girls in their bras and panties, just so that's appealing.
like where this is
that
going.
That always is. So as a fan of horror movies,
yes.
Are you a fan of both types? And when I say both types, I mean like the classic, like what are considered just classic.
Absolutely.
And then schlocky.
I am a fan of the best movies, like The Omen, which I love, with The Exorcist, and the absolute worst movies. Not necessarily, I don't think they're bad, but Nightmare on Elm Street, I Know What You Did Last Summer, big fan. The ones I don't like are the gruesome ones.
Oh, the slasher porn and
I don't like.
Yeah.
You know, but I
really Hostel, things like
Hostel,
that.
I don't like.
Yeah.
But I love Final Destination, that kind of, you know, I love all of them.
I saw something recently, actually we had one of the guests, I think, on the show from something that was a very small production of it, but it was very funny, and it was called I Know What You Did Last Donna Summer.
Yes, I knew about that.
At Casita del Campo.
One of the differences in our score, first of all, let me just say my writing partner's not here, who I wrote the music with, Michael Paternostro. So we have an original pop score, which I'm very proud of and very excited about. That's the big difference. It's all, you know, 15, I think, original songs. It's very pop rock score.
Okay.
You know, and an original script. And one of the things that we're doing, which is also very exciting, is we're using social media, which is something that I don't know that much about, but I'm learning now. But what's happening is the audience is going to tweet who they think the killer is.
So, oh, really?
Yes. So basically, when you come to the theater, you're going to be asked to follow the show on Twitter.
Okay.
This is a learning curve for me as well. You know, and when you buy tickets, you're asked to follow the show on Twitter.
All right.
And you'll be told that there'll be a point in the show where you'll be asked to tweet. So we're the first show that's encouraging people to keep their phones on during the show, to put it on vibrate.
Right.
So they're going to have choices, and they're going to tweet who they think the killer is, and we have four different endings, and the actors will be alerted to a secret way which
who
the killer is that night.
And we had the gentleman who directed Clue on a couple of months ago, and he was talking about that. You know, younger people probably won't. But the great film with Tim Curry.
Love
and very, very.
How do you announce the? Is it announced on a screen?
They let the actors know backstage, and they play a certain ending.
I know, but how do you let them know?
Oh, well, one of the lead characters is a reporter.
Oh.
And she is constantly reporting live her television show, Horrible Story. So that's the conceit of how she says we're going to. It's basically saying it's social media and reality TV shows have taken over. So they just decide, it's like, let's just turn this into a reality show, basically. And pick a winner, if you will.
Speaking of social media, we should let people know how to find out about this. The website, first off, scarymusicalthemusical.com. Tickets and groups, it's you can call 818-508-7101, extension 6, or you can visit nohoace.com. That's a theater for the website for the NoHo Arts Center. The show that we are talking about is called Scary Musical to Musical, and it previews Friday, September 12th, Saturday, September 13th, Sunday, September 14th, and Thursday, September 18th. This is through November 9th. And this is at the NoHo Arts Center, 11136 Magnolia Boulevard in North Hollywood. Once again, great area in town. Go to Pit Fire Pizza right across the way.
I was just there yesterday.
Phenomenal stuff there. And there's all these great, there's a couple of new places going up there. And it is one of those places. Park once, go, dinner, do the whole thing.
Richard, is this the first full scale production of the show?
Yes. That's a very good question, because we have done endless and countless readings and workshops. Basically, what started it off was we did the ASCAP Disney workshop that Stephen Schwartz is in charge of. And Stephen took a liking to the show, and he was very kind to us, and he took us to Carnegie Mellon, which was his alma mater. Mm-hmm. And they workshopped it there with the graduate students from the Carnegie Mellon, which was an amazing experience. Then we also did a workshop at University of Northern Colorado that David Grapes took us to. And we did a very nice workshop in New York at the York Theater. We've done about 5 readings. So this is the first.
How exciting.
But it's not a rolling premiere, because I don't know what that means.
I didn't know until that. But interestingly enough,
it's a regular premiere. 3 different places.
Oh. But interestingly enough, the rolling premiere I discussed, Carrie Krim's show, directed by Scott Schwartz, Stephen's son.
Of course.
Yeah. So how about that for a coincidence?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't know that.
Yeah.
And
tweet him and find out what a rolling premiere is.
It's not happening simultaneously, but it's one
happens at different
after,
venues. Right.
But not simultaneously.
So I'm curious. You mentioned a film that I absolutely love, and I think is a great example of an unappreciated movie. I think The Omen is one of the scariest movies I've ever seen.
Me too.
I remember when it came out because it was the first one that really, you know, with the heavy. I mean, not heavy-handed. Exorcist is phenomenal, but The Omen just got under your skin. There was something just so creepy.
I love The Omen
about that.
I also think the acting was so extraordinary. Lee Remick was so good in it. Yeah. Gregory Peck and what was her name who played the wonderful English actress who played the nursemaid?
Oh, I don't remember. I don't remember. I wouldn't have even remembered.
It was
Lee
so creepy.
Lee Merrick.
And I had two martinis before seeing it, which was probably not a good idea. I don't know. So it was even scarier. Or maybe a good idea.
Yeah.
Is it ever a bad idea to have two martinis?
Absolutely not.
What about Rosemary's Baby? Where does that fit on your scale of 1 to 10 of best movies that you like?
I love Rosemary's Baby. Yeah, it's that's more psychologically creepy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know?
This is a very little known fact, but the Rosemary Clooney and Joe Ferrer were living in the Dakota at the time that movie was being written, and they were friends with the writer, and they used her name and the fact she was pregnant at the time.
Ira Levin.
Oh, really?
Wasn't Ira Levin?
Ira Levin. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how that kind of, I mean,
know
it,
that.
It just, they kind of just kind of grabbed that and ran with it into a different direction.
It's really?
Story. Yeah.
Well, there's a wonderful story about when Roman Polanski directed that in Rosemary's Baby, that he put, there's a shot with Ruth Gordon in the room and you only see about half of her and you don't hear what she's saying. And this would be a hard thing to impart on radio, but it's a very, it looks like a poorly assembled shot. It looks terrible, and you can't hear her. And the cinematographer was saying to Roman Polanski, you know, this is terrible. We have to change this. You can't see her, and you can't hear her. And he said, when we watch this in a theater, I want you to sit with me the first time we sit with an audience. And that scene came up. And an entire theater full of people leaned to their left to attempt to see in the door to change their angle because they were so drawn in.
It was
in.
From Mia Farrow's point of view. She's in the closet.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
She's coming from one apartment to the other in the closet. She's
right.
At least there's a little crack in the closet. Yeah.
Right. And they said, and the fact that a theater full of people would be so rapt that they would think that they could change the projected image on the screen by changing their perspective. This fascinated me.
That's neat.
That. Yeah. That just really interested me.
Well, this sounds like a gas.
Doesn't it?
Show. Yeah.
It's a hoot.
Yeah.
It's a rollick. It's fun.
Rollick.
It's a rollick.
Now, you said it.
It's not the word they told me to say. I forget now.
No, you mentioned that it's.
You can't be rollick.
Rollick.
Come on, rollick.
It's a rollick.
Okay, well, if you can't use it, we'll use it.
It's a noun. It's a noun. Yeah, it's a noun. It's a rollick. It's not a frolic.
It's a rollick. It's fun. But, and so 15 songs, that's a lot of music to come up with, right?
There's a lot of music. Yeah.
Did it morph a lot during the workshop process, or you pretty much have the same narrative you started
it
with?
It morphed a lot.
Really?
To the point of there were many different...
It was originally a drama.
Right. There were many different murderers. There were many different... The reason why we came up... The reason how the idea came up to do the multiple endings was because I had about 6 endings.
I was just about to ask you that.
So as a joke, I don't remember who said we should just do multiple endings. And then I said, I have like 6 endings. So we looked at them all, and that's how that happened. Yes, and it morphed a lot.
Is there a specific time that they're supposed to tweet? Like, is there a break in the action, or are they just supposed to do it on the fly while the show is going on?
No, there's a specific moment where they're told, where the reporter actually says that it's, you know, time to tweet.
Okay.
We're trying it tonight in tech.
Okay.
In previews this weekend. But they're told when they buy their tickets.
Right.
And then Kevin Bailey, who runs the theater, makes an announcement before the show.
Right.
And they'll be told again. You know. And if people don't want to tweet, they don't have to tweet. I mean,
right.
You know.
But this sounds like that perfect kind of interaction, which is not passive interaction, but if you want to interact, you can, but no one's going to pull you up on stage and throw you on a pony.
No, the lights aren't going to come up in the audience. And,
right,
you know,
right.
But the thing is, what I'm learning now is when you tweet, it streams. Does anyone here tweet?
I do not.
I have tweeted in college, but I was experimenting.
Okay. We all did that. Apparently.
I was young. I needed the money.
Well, Kevin might know, but apparently then, you know, it streams out to countless people who right. are who are following your
yeah.
Twitter
yeah.
account.
Tweet.
Your
right.
tweet. Your tweet.
Get with it, Richard.
Well, it's interesting that you're... you're doing that. We're using Twitter and social media. We actually have a step and repeat, where you can get your picture taken before you go into the theater, and if you'll tweet that to us, and maybe they should tweet it to you. But we'll put you in the movie at the end.
Oh, really?
Put it in the
that's
so
cool.
I love your social media idea. I think it's to your point about trying to engage people,
sure.
and bring people in, and you know, instead of having an experience like, you know, here's your program, sit down, shut up, watch the show, get out of here. It's yeah. like, no, I want to go and I want to be involved in
yeah.
what I'm
but
doing.
It's, but it's these kinds of shows.
Yes.
Right,
yes.
correct. For a fun
because
show.
Because the music center, the Center Theater Group was really promoting that as being part of the experience of going to their shows. They wanted you to tweet and say what you were thinking of their shows. Their shows were not these kinds of shows. Which I felt was very wrong.
What, you mean tweeting after the fact?
No, like,
during the show?
Yeah. During Death of a Salesman,
yeah.
wouldn't work.
That's ridiculous. That's strange.
And
they encouraged people to tweet.
They wanted people to tweet.
No, so this is the kind of show where, you know, God willing, if it does well, you know, the Rocky Horror Show, where people respond back to the cast on stage
right.
after. It should be that type of feeling.
Of course.
Yeah, almost like a absolutely. Like the. That's one of the reasons I love British Panto so much. That sort of call and response. You cheer the hero when they walk out. You boo the villain when they walk out. I love that. So, but once again, that interaction where you're not. Interaction without victimization. Let's put it that way. The shows
so
we're talking about. We're talking about Scary Musical, the Musical. And for tickets on that, you need to go to scarymusicalthemusical.com. And, of course, the other show, Vox Lumiere, the Phantom of the Opera. And that is voxlumiere.com. We'll have time to throw that out
and
one more
time. That's coming up. Both shows open on
but
September
it's that
19th.
Time. Oh, thank you, Michael.
Yep.
It's that time. It's
it
5
is.
Minutes to go when we... ask our guests
yes.
to share a tale of woe, a tale of embarrassment, a tale of something going wrong during
terribly,
a performance.
Terribly wrong.
Why don't we start with you, sir, since you've taken a little bit of a break?
I've been thinking since you asked earlier, and
yep.
it's like, I'm not sure I have one. I have maybe a funny story.
Please,
we've been on
whatever
on the
you
road.
Like.
When you're on the road, there are lots of funny stories, but we did a gig up in Washington State, and, you know, it's a big cast. You know, the Weekly Chapel with, like, 20, 22 people.
Oh, wow.
So we it's a big show. We've got, you know, we've got 7 singers and 6 dancers and 3-piece band and tech. So, you know, you can't get all that in the overhead compartment.
But right.
We were counting heads, and we're looking. We're in the van. Got to go to the airport. We're going to miss. It's like, it's early. And it's like, where's Brian? It's like, I don't know. It's like, Brian, we can't find him. It's like, well, it's like, okay, we can't wait. We got to leave Brian. So we drove to the airport. So all we had, but somebody said, I went to his room. I found his shoes. okay, we got Brian's shoes.
We got Brian's shoes.
And we're
going
to leave to the airport. So we're heading to the airport. So we had a connecting flight.
Which is more disconcerting when you could only find someone's
exactly.
shoes.
Exactly. We had the shoes. No socks.
But
no
a less
nothing,
expensive
just...
ticket.
Yes. So but that's always what they find on Dateline before they discover the body.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, we saw him last night in the bar, and then we have the shoes. Okay. Fine. So it's like, we're worrying about Brian. We're calling the phone. We're calling the hotel. It's like, you know, we tell him the hotel, if you see Brian, send him to the airport. Here's cab money. So we get to the airport. We have a connecting flight. And it's like, we get on the plane, and we're like worrying about Brian. It's like, okay, well, we'll get off the plane, and we'll get to the next gate, and we'll call, and we'll see if we can track him down. Maybe we call the police. So we get there, and we're carrying the shoes, and we've got the bags and everything else. And we're walking up to the gate, and there's Brian. He's like standing at the gate waiting for us. It's like, you know, we in his socking feet. It's like, well, Brian, we have your shoes.
What happened?
He must have been very grateful.
He said, okay, I got up and I was late and I couldn't find you. And it's like, well, you weren't in your room. He said, no, I wasn't in my room. He said, okay, don't tell me anymore.
Oh, okay.
And then he missed the flight. He got on another flight that somehow got there before us. But he's doing all this in his stocking feet.
This was the airport, not from the city you were leaving in. This
but the
was
connecting
the
airport.
Oh, that's hysterical.
So it's still to this day that we're like, okay.
We've got
Brian,
your shoes.
I got your shoes.
Yes.
But.
Well, the gentleman at gate 6, please pick up a white courtesy phone.
We've
got your shoes.
So
that's
That good. So Brian, still to this day, it's like I really don't want to know, but somehow you made it. So we're glad.
Richard Hochberg. Richard, you got something?
Yeah, mine is something that didn't happen to me, but it happened to a show that I was directing.
Oh, sure.
So indirectly, it happened to me. It's a short story, but it's a good one. I directed a version of The Full Monty, and The Full Monty, you know, is about a bunch of guys who become strippers to, you know the story.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So the last scene in The Full Monty, they do a big strip number, and the way it's done is they're literally stripped down to their, like a G-string, and they take their hat and they put their hat over their G-string, and then, actually they're not even wearing a G-string, and at the last second they take their hat and they lift it up, and a light from behind them shines on the audience to blind the audience for 1 second.
Okay.
And then there's a blackout. And the opening night that we did it, there was no light. So they just basically were standing there in full, completely naked, totally naked.
The
just
full
standing
Monty.
There. And there was no light cue. Yeah. There was no other light cue.
Right.
They just, I mean, it was, that was...
Oh, right, so there was nothing to exit with.
No, they just sort of stood there, and they just kind of, like, walked off and beat to the music.
You know, that's why,
but that was embarrassing for them. I mean,
oh.
I felt bad, exactly.
Oh.
I mean, I was just putting my head in my lap, going, oh, my God. But
ticket sales skyrocket.
Oh, yes.
Yes. If you're going to do that, do
Will
it the first
Collier.
Thing.
You know who Will is. Yeah.
Of course, right? Very well.
Will did the show.
He was in my Gene Pitney show.
Oh, yes, okay. Will did The Full Monty.
That's right.
For us, and... what happened to him when that moment came, the light came, and, you know, the hat, he dropped his hat.
Oh.
And he couldn't see it or find it. So it was all that time scrambling to pick it up, and while the audience was getting quite a good look at his Monty.
It's a tricky cue.
Yeah. Talk about having to be perfectly timed. Speaking of time, we are out of it. What a pleasure to speak to both of you. Really enjoyed having both of you on.
Thank you.
And one more time, very quick, Michael, would you throw the URLs out there for people if you have them handy?
I
can give one. I have a VoxLumiere.com, easy to remember. And if I remember correctly, it's ScaryMusicalTheMusical.com. Is that correct?
Correct.
Did it all from memory.
You see? You didn't need me at all.
Must be my ginkgo biloba.
Anybody tell you look like Fritz Coleman at all?
No.
Ever? Never? No. You're reminiscent. You don't look really just like him.
But I'll take that.
He's such a nice man, and so are you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's been a joy, guys. Thank you.
Gentlemen, a pleasure.
Thank
having
you.
Both
thank
of you,
you
on.
See
both
on
your
the radio
shows, home. And we'll talk to you soon.
You bet.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strohle, right here on LA Talk Radio.